Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have another great show for you. We have two guests. Our first guest is Jeff for Justice. Jeff is a political activist and he has his own show, the Jeff for Justice Show. And Mimi German, an activist from Oregon who founded No Nukes Northwest. Jeff will be talking about Measure 90 in Oregon that wants to limit democracy through the so-called top two primary. And Mimi will give her position on that, but also talk about her decades-long activism and the No Nukes Northwest that she co-founded and that's going strong up there in Portland. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Jeff for Justice. And after Jeff, stay tuned and we'll be chatting with Mimi German. Justice, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hi, thank you.
I've been on your show before, so it's nice to have you on my show. Before we get into our topic, can you tell my listeners about yourself?
Yes, I label myself a social justice activist. And by the way, sorry, real quick, am I too loud or am I okay with the volume?
You're perfect.
Okay, I'm a social justice activist, and I got started I'd say around 2000 when I was 20 years old, and that's when I was coming out of a closet as a gay person and started to learn about the issues of equality. And then since then, I've expanded to other social justice issues, and these days I focus a lot on homeless outreach, specifically targeted towards people who are homeless living out of their vehicles. And, you know, speaking out against these inhumane laws criminalizing homelessness. And, of course, when you have that passion to be an activist, I think you know this, Cindy, that you can't turn it off. And then, you know, there's a lot of things I care about, but those two issues are of special importance because they impact me directly the most, and it's what I feel most equipped to do. And then just other issues, such as, you know, various election issues. And a big thing on my radar right now is something called open primary, top two voting, which we have here in California, and they're trying to pass in Oregon in the election coming up in a few weeks.
And that's what I invited you on to talk about today. We've seen now Proposition 14, the top two primary so-called passed in California in 2010. Of course, it had a lot of money backing it and a lot of propaganda saying that it would, break the deadlock in Sacramento and blah, blah, blah. But what it was really intended for, I believe, is to kill third parties and independent political struggle and action. And that's been proven. This year in 2014, we had our primary on June 3rd, I think. And the outcome of that is in 99.9% of the offices, what the top two primary affected. It's either a Democrat versus a Republican, or Republican versus Republican and Democrat versus Democrat. So I think, obviously, it's limiting to democracy. So talk about, you know, that and this Proposition 90 in Oregon that's pushing for the same thing.
Yes, I would like to, and this is another passion of mine, another issue that's important to me is the advancement of alternative political parties. And, of course, you yourself have left the two-party system charade behind, as have I, and you ran for governor here in California. So you are a victim of top two open primary yourself, having run earlier this year, you. And so anyway, I just want to make sure, you know, you and I are kind of political nerds, so we get this. But just, you know, this is kind of a hard, boring political topic. So I just want to make sure that everybody follows us and understands that every elections happen every 2 years. Right. We all know that. Mm-hmm. And then every election cycle, every 2 years, there's two elections, a primary election, meaning the first election, and then a general election in November. Now, those primary elections are the first ones of those two each election cycle, and they happen on a different day in different states. So, as you said, ours is in June here in California, and in Oregon, it is in May. And in the other states, it varies from state to state when they have their primary. And essentially, you know, for people who get confused about primaries, think of them as when the parties are really competing against themselves more so than they're competing against their opponents.
Well, they should be. That's what primaries should be.
Right. So they're vetting their, you know, remember it was Obama and Hillary for president back with the Democrats in 12 and Romney and Ron Paul. And they have the people who are registered to vote get to vote for, you know, which one they want to go forward in advance and represent them. It's almost kind of like America's Got Talent. You know, you're like in the semifinals and then you flash forward and the November general election is the finals. And the way it used to be in California and is presently in Oregon is that each party, each major so-called qualified party would advance to November with their top vote earner from that primary election.
Right.
So meaning the top Democrat, the top Republican, the top Green Party, the top Peace and Freedom, the top Libertarian would go on and compete against each other in November.
Well, and so let's talk just a second. That in the primaries, it used to be that you would only get to vote for your party during the primaries. Now they call it an open primary, and they're saying that that's more democratic.
Correct, and I have mixed views about that particular side. So here's it's what I call deception. It's really deceptive and it's really sneaky because it seems like voters are getting more choice, and kind of in a way they do in the primaries, but the trade-off is a blatant reduction in choice in November. So it used to be, as you said, that if you were a Democrat, you had to get a Democrat ballot and vote for Democrats. If you were a Republican, you had to vote for Republicans. If you were Green, and some of those parties allowed for so-called outsiders to vote for them. And if you were declined to state or independent or nonpartisan or non-affiliated, whatever you want to call it, then you would get a nonpartisan ballot, which really wouldn't include any of the major races.
No, when I was declined to state, they would give me a Democratic ballot.
Right. So different parties, some of them would allow the outsiders, again, the quote unquote outsiders, to vote for them. Some of them wouldn't. And now they're changing it to an open. Now it's changed to an open primary where they say, regardless of who you're voting for, you can cross vote against party lines, particularly people who wanted to vote for Arnold Schwarzenegger's second term really wanted to vote. There were a lot of Democrats who wanted to vote for him, but could not because they had to vote for their party line in their ballot. And so the trade-off. This is where it gets to be this phony trade-off. You know, The proponents of this say, okay, now we're going to open the primary and anybody can vote, any voter can vote for any candidate of any party regardless of registration. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of mixed views about that, and I have mixed views, but that's not really what's important. What's important is flash forward to November, and you get voter disenfranchisement because you get a top two. And notice, Cindy, this is very important. Notice that you, the proponents of this usually only call it open primary. Well, they should be calling it open primary slash top two voting because, hello, they forget often to tell people the top two part, which is going to reduce voter choice to just two. Now, Cindy, you and I can count, right? I mean, we can, you know, we know how to count. So when we had our ballots before in our general elections in November, they used to have up to five or seven different candidates. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven is more options than two. So it's a reduction in voter choice, blatant as day. I don't even know why they would want to have a general election if they're going to do that, because it's just kind of stupid.
Right.
And here's, and then the other thing is, as you said earlier, it basically solidifies the incumbents winning. There's an organization called Fair Vote. They've done the studies. This top, this open primary top two scheme exists in Louisiana, Washington, and California. They tried to do it in Arizona in 2012. That failed, thankfully. And now they're trying to do it in Oregon, Measure 90. Hopefully it fails here in a couple weeks when we vote in November. And it's just a blatant reduction of voter choice that causes, in effect, killing off the alternative political parties. And it creates, in some areas, bizarre one-party races where the top two is two Democrats or two Republicans.
Right.
And even though you and I vote outside the two-party system, as much as I hate to say it, I don't want to disenfranchise a Republican or a Democrat from their right to vote, their freedom of choice to vote for who they want. So we know that elections as they presently are with the closed primary, there's a lot of problems with elections as they are, but top two open primary is not the solution to make it any better.
I have a couple of points about this. First of all, people in California don't understand what they voted for in 2010. I still get many people telling me that they're going to vote for me in November. And
right.
Not only that, I had KGO, which is the biggest radio station in California. They're out of San Francisco. I'm not going to say who the host was because I'm not exactly sure. And I don't want to like slander somebody else if it wasn't him. They said they actually... Hold on a second. My grandson just came in. They actually called me about a month or so ago to invite me to a gubernatorial debate.
Funny.
Yeah, I was like, don't you know that we have top two primary here in California? And I was not in the top two. Hello. And this was like a political radio show from the biggest radio station in California in San Francisco. So nobody understands this. But I am seeing some articles in corporate media talking about top two. And not only did it limit our choices in November in the general election, but it also created some very onerous
one party races?
Well, no. Things that they put on the parties. It's like before Top Two Peace and Freedom Party, and this is every party, we only had to get 2% of the vote in any state race to remain on the ballot. So in 2014, this year, we would have to have gotten 2% in any state race, and we did, and then we would be a recognized political party with ballot access for the next election. But now they're saying we have to have 1% of the total registered voters registered Peace and Freedom to remain ballot. And we have about 75,000, and the current 1% is over 100,000. So they're even making it the situation impossible for third parties to stay as ballot recognized parties in California. I don't know if Prop 90 has that that thing written into the law?
I'm not sure about that, but there's definitely a lot of hindrances to alternative political parties or so-called third parties, and those include unfair election laws, such as debates not being mandatory. I mean, Cindy, if you and I had a company,
right,
we would interview more than just two candidates from the job,
right,
for the job, especially the biggest job of the country. So we would interview more than, you know, they just had that stupid fan gate debate between those two party system goons in Florida. And I said, yeah, I would have voted for the fan if either of them, but there is a third party option, at least one libertarian. I don't know if there's other alternative parties there. So we have unfair election laws, media bias, media blackout, and an uneducated public about this, about the options. Of course, it's a catch-22. How can the public be educated? And this is really important about these so-called open primary slash top two voting scheme, and why I hope voters in Oregon reject it, is because if you're in a primary, first of all, voter turnout in primaries is all-time low in California the last three election cycles.
Right, right.
So got low voter turnout of people not even paying attention, especially when they don't put so-called sexy or exciting ballot measures on primary elections.
Right.
People aren't even paying attention till the good stuff gets on the ballot in November. And that means the media is not paying attention. That means your alternative party and unwealthy candidates don't have the time and momentum to build a presence in an election cycle. I mean, what, you have basically a month or two to campaign and go against the establishment and the wealthy billionaire funded two-party system people. But I do want to emphasize one thing, Cindy. As much as you and I are, of course, you know, we're fed up with the two-party system. We realize the charade it is. I do want to emphasize, though, Measure 90 is not really a partisan issue. As much as I despise the two-party system, it really will hurt voters of all walks of life, especially if they end up in an area where it's a one-party race and they're hardcore partisan Democrat or hardcore partisan Republican, and they get a ballot and there's only two Republicans or two Democrats to vote for, and they're on the opposite side of that party. So it's going to hurt voters across the board regardless. And why, not only why would they even bother to have the general election after that whole open primary, but I would say, why not instead make it a top, I don't know, five or seven again? Why not have the top candidate from each qualified party instead of the top two?
Right.
And it appeared to be a conspiracy to basically kill off the alternative parties, because we're in a post-Tea Party, post-Occupy era. People are fed up with the establishment. But I'll tell you what, it's an abuser-victim mentality, like Chris Brown and Rihanna. Like, why do you keep going back to the abuser who beats the hell out of you and expecting different results, voters who keep voting for the two-party system? I don't know. I'm ranting. Sorry.
Well, absolutely. And another thing about California's top two so-called open primary thing is, I don't know if this is in Oregon's law, but it doesn't apply to the presidential race. So that makes it even more confusing for people, because in June, during a presidential election year, you actually do only vote for your party affiliation. And then, you know, everybody is on the ballot in California, whoever wins that party's primary or who's nominated at their convention, because Peace and Freedom Party actually nominates our candidates at our convention, then, you know, then you get, you can vote for however many candidates. I think there was something like 15 candidates for president on California's ballot in 2012. So that's even more confusing for people. I don't know if that's probably... the Oregon law does not apply to the presidential election.
No, it does not apply. I don't think a top two open primary will ever apply to a presidential election, because I think that's under a separate federal law thing.
Yes, so it is. Definitely a different institution or bureaucracy governs those things. But also, they govern the congressional races, but those are under top two in California.
Yeah, it is weird. But yeah, so basically, the top two in California and Oregon if it passes, will apply to what they call statewide partisan offices. So basically governor and all those boring offices like secretary of state and insurance commissioner, and then your congressman, and then your state assemblyman, and then your state senate. So it's all those so-called partisan races. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of, you know, when this was on the ballot in California, it didn't get a lot of attention back in 2010. And previously it had been on the ballot, I think, in the 90s or early 2000s, I forget, and voters rejected it then, but it was slipped in a boring primary in the primary of 2010,
right,
and nobody was paying attention, and it passed. And I have to wonder, I made videos about that then warning people. Uh-huh. I made videos warning about Arizona in 2012, and now on my Jeffrey Justice YouTube channel, I'm making videos warning people about the Oregon. And thankfully, the Oregon voters are paying attention because this is being voted on in a general election. But I have to wonder, I have not found the answer to this. I got to wonder, is this a conspiracy to eliminate the third party options from ever becoming viable, because Congress has all time low approval ratings, and polls have started to show people want to vote for options out of the two party system. And I don't get it. Like, why is other issues, like as a gay man, I can't believe the marriage equality issue has happened so much more expediently than the advancement of alternative parties. Or the decriminalization of marijuana is starting to get momentum. So I can't believe these other issues are taking off. And a lot of people, you know, like to dog Ross Perot or Ralph Nader and call them the spoiler, which is bull right, nonsense, because right, there's no spoiler in a representative democracy when it should be, you know, every person being able to have a freedom of vote. But Nader and Perot were not around in the internet age. We're in the internet age now, and I still can't believe post-Tea Party, post-Occupy, people keep falling for the same failed two-party system of endless war, poverty, pollution, erosion of civil liberties. They keep voting for it, expecting different results. I can't get it, Cindy. It just blows my mind.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Well, the thing is also about not applying to the presidential election. The Democrats and Republicans really have the top two sewn up anyway for decades. And like you said, it's so entrenched. It's pitiful. It's pathetic. I don't get so upset with the politicians or the system anymore. I'm with you. I get upset with the people who keep on voting for, you know, the war party or the party of Wall Street, which is the Democrats and Republicans, and expecting something different. So in California in 2010, it was interesting because every party opposed Prop 14, even the Republicans and the Democrats. The thing is the party leadership, like Jerry Brown and Schwarzenegger and those people, they were proponents of it. And the only reason it passed is because it got so much money. In California, we started in the early 1900s to have all these progressive reforms, electoral reforms. And we were one of the first states to even get the initiative process going, but now it's been corrupted by money. Look at Prop 37. Why did that fail? Why did labeling GMOs fail? Why did marriage equality fail? It's because the side that gets the most money is the side that's going to prevail.
And it's also money from outside the state, because
absolutely.
Yeah, in Oregon right now, this Measure 90 is being funded by some Texas oil billionaire and also Mayor Michael Bloomberg from New York. So it's funny how these guys from outside of these states are telling people how to run their elections in Oregon. It's bewildering. And some people, I want to emphasize, in case any Oregon voters are listening, I promise this is not really a partisan issue, even though we're ranting about how it does hurt the alternative party options. It does hurt the alternative party options, but make no mistake about it. It also hurts the Democrats and Republican voters when they wind up getting, like, my friend lives in Los Angeles, right?
Uh-huh.
He lives by downtown LA, and I see his sample ballot, and for all of those local races of state senate, state assembly, and the congressman, it's two Democrats. So even though I'm not a Republican, and empathy from me to Republicans is not going to happen often, so don't get used to it, Republicans. But I do empathize with the fact that they are disenfranchised if they get this ballot. They don't have nobody to vote for.
Totally agree.
And the alternative party supporters.
Yeah, absolutely. I there's just so many reforms we need to make. So, Jeff, for Justice, we're running out of time. And I, interestingly enough, my next guest on the Soapbox, where I have two guests this week, is an activist from Oregon. So I will ask her about what she how she feels about this Proposition 90. I don't want to put her on the spot. She might not be a political nerd like we are. She might just be. She just might be an activist. But I will ask her about it. So we are running out of time, Jeff. So tell my listeners again how they can access your more information and your YouTube channel and things like that.
They can check me out at jeff4justice.com. That's the number four, not the word. jeff4justice.com. And if you search Jeff for Justice on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, I'll be there and happy to talk to anybody and work on doing whatever we can to put a drop in the bucket to make the world a better place and end needless suffering.
And Jeff, that we'll put all those links at our newsletter too. So Jeff, thanks so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and thanks for your constant struggle, because I know it's not easy.
You're an inspiration. Thank you for all you do, Cindy.
Okay, talk soon, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you so much. I actually can't believe that I'm really talking to you, because I remember the first time I saw you on the news doing the activism work that you were basically forced
right.
into doing.
Right.
And I just wanted to say that I'm incredibly sad about what happened in your life to your son and to all of our vets, and what's happening to them on a daily basis. I think it's just despicable.
Absolutely. And here, you know, I started 10 years ago when my son was killed. And here I am literally sitting here with a shawl around my shoulders because I'm cold, as a grandma of almost five, and I'm still doing it. And it really makes me, it's just like, why do we have to keep doing it? And then I look back over the years, and you've been an activist really for a long time, and you've done some really amazing things over the years, but we still have to keep fighting. And it's annoying to me it's just that capitalism and militarism and all of these isms are still so
prevalent.
They're ingrained, they're entrenched, so much so that most people don't even recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of our lives. It's just there. So before your interview, I was talking to a political activist, and we were talking about the so-called top two primaries that exist now in California, Louisiana, and Washington State. And there's there's a proposition in Oregon that's called Proposition 90 that's trying to do... Measure 90. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Measure 90 that's trying to do the same thing in Oregon that we have going on in the other three states. So as an Oregonian, what is your thoughts about that? Just very briefly, you don't have to really go too much into depth about that.
Sure. First of all, for anybody listening in the next couple days in Oregon and you're confused about this, which you should be,
mm-hmm.
It was intentionally put out to confuse us.
Right.
Us meaning the thinking people.
Uh-huh.
The vote is for no on 90.
Uh-huh.
It makes it seem as though they're going to open up our primaries so that we can have more parties
right.
to vote for. But that's not the case. It was it's not thought out. They didn't do it properly. They didn't do it in a way that I actually think they did it in a way to deceive. Mm-hmm. I'm not positive about that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
So for whatever reason, whether it's due to deception or intentional deception or just the fact that it was written poorly, vote no on it. This is not the way that we're going to open up our floor to have real political candidates to vote for. So in the meantime, we need to keep it the way it is. And for those of us who are working on the political sphere to open up things like this, please continue to work to do that for us so that we can have more parties. That's not my particular thing. Mm-hmm. I vote, but I don't try to change laws necessarily. So for those of you who do, please continue to do that so that we can have more parties to vote for.
Well, what it's turned out to in California is that it's open the primary so you can vote for anybody in the primary, but then you only have two choices in the general election, and it's always Democrats or Republicans. So that's not really a choice. So I urge people in Oregon to reject this Measure 90 strongly. So you have just like I said earlier, you have such a long history of peace activism and social justice activism. And so you, gosh, have been around the world, you know, doing something, going to peace camps and working in, you know, against nukes and for peace and everything. So tell my listeners, you've been to, let me see, I'm looking at this. You've been to the peace camp in England?
Graham Common.
Mm-hmm. Shoreham in New York. And New Hampshire. So tell us a little bit about what that was like.
Well, Shoreham was an anti-nuclear protest issue. Yeah, they were building a nuclear plant. And the same with Pilgrim and in Massachusetts and
Seabrook in New
Hampshire. So those were just, I shouldn't say just, those were nuclear plants that we were opposing. Okay. Those weren't peace camps. The two peace camps that I spent time on, I spent a lot of time at the Seneca Peace Camp, the Seneca Women's Peace Encampment in upstate New York. Romulus, New York. And that was in the 80s when that was put together by a woman who owned a little house up there right on the edge of the base, the U.S. base. And it was so close to me. I was living in Boston, in Cambridge at the time. So I'd go back and forth and stay in the house. There were a lot of women there from around the world. We did a lot of protesting around that military base, and we broke through the fences. We did a lot of stuff. I learned then a lot about my personal power. Mm-hmm. Rituals. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of spiritual rituals in order to learn how powerful we can be, especially as women. And I encourage women to locate their power because you have a lot of it. You have far more power than the government has. It just doesn't look that way. So,
right. Especially women together, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I just like a little aside here last week or the week before, I don't know. Somebody called me a hag on Facebook, and I was just like, because he opposed what I was saying, of course. You can't say I oppose what you just said because here are my logical facts. He just went right straight to you're just a wrinkled old hag or whatever. And I was like, you don't even realize what a compliment you just paid me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you think you're calling me something that's bad, but, you know, crones and hags traditionally are very powerful.
Right. In order to be one, you have had to live.
Absolutely. Would I rather be a crone or a hag, or would I want to be in my grave like my son? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, mm-hmm. well, you know, whatever. Yeah, I don't have Botox. I don't, you know, whatever. I'm just alive. And so if you want to call me those names, you're not bothering me.
Right. So at Seneca, we got together often to do activism through the fence. And meaning cutting the fence in different areas and just walking in mm-hmm. to the base. Because what I realized and what we all realized then is that no matter how much the government tells you that these bases are protected, mm-hmm. they're not. And
oh yeah, I mean, look at what happened in
with Sister Megan.
Yeah, they walked right up to the nuclear sure. facility.
And you can do that. I'm guessing, I don't know for a fact, but you can probably do that at so many of these bases and nuclear power plants. And I know that I went to, just an aside, we protest a lot at the Columbia Generating Station in Washington State, which is on Hanford's land. And right. they're two different things. Uh-huh. And the Columbia Generating Station is a nuclear power plant that we're all trying to shut down. And when you go on that road, there's one long road that leads right into the nuclear power plant. You can walk. There's no fence. You can walk right in to the nuclear power plant. There's those rails, those like, I don't know what they're called, those train rails where they're not rails, the guard rail that goes down, you know, so you have to wait until somebody says you can go in and then it right. would come up and block your car from going in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are never down. So I'm letting people know, if you want to protest at Columbia Generating Station, the guardrail is always up. You can just walk in. You don't even have to stay on the road in front of the Columbia Generating Station. Just walk in.
Mm-hmm.
That's how protected that is. The Seneca Peace, the Seneca Women's Peace Encampment, we found that that wasn't protected, you know, the U.S. base there. And when I went to Greenham Common in England, it was the same thing. There's a fence all the way around the perimeter of the Air Force base and, you know, where there's, you know, missile silos or whatever was there, airplanes and Black Hawks mm-hmm. and things like that. And you could just cut the fence and walk in. And that's what women did. And when I was there, I got there the day before women had planned an action to go inside the Air Force base with cans of white paint, go into the hangar, mm-hmm. if they could get there, go all the way into the hangar, climb onto the, I can't remember the name, the Black Hawk. I don't know my military toy names.
Right,
I've never bothered. They all kill.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was one of those shielded airplanes that can go under the radar.
Oh,
and like it's like a billion-dollar plane,
right.
you know, one of those. And it was like one of the first ones.
Uh-huh.
Well, the women went all the way in. They strolled all the way in down the road on into the hangars. They climbed onto the plane, and they dumped white paint all over the plane, and they ruined it.
That's hilarious.
And they knew they'd get arrested
uh-huh.
if they were caught. Uh-huh. And they finally got caught after the white paint was spilled all over the plane. And they did a lot of time. All of them did a lot of time in jail.
Those women are my heroes.
They're my heroes too.
Yeah.
So I was there for that. And there were women from so many countries in so many camps. It was a huge encampment. There were colors, camps set in colors. So if you were a lesbian camp, you could be in this color camp if you mm-hmm. chose to be. If you were a crone, mm-hmm. you get the crone camp, mm-hmm. you know, and so on.
Uh-huh.
There were camps for every woman there, any place you wanted to hang out. And all of us were there for the same reason, which was to show that, first of all, we were for peace and not war, and that the U.S. needed to stay home and not come into different countries to push itself on, you know, every other country to promote war.
Mm-hmm.
And third, to show how little protection there really is, that it's a facade. All it is a death machine. It's just for power. It's just to create more space for the empire. And I had a blast. It was very powerful. And, Yeah. So anyway, that's the story of me at Greenham Common. I'm grateful to have had that experience. I'm grateful that there were so many women still around the world who feel as strongly as you and I do for peace. I've learned now, though, that I have a different tactic. I'm no longer always a peacenik. I believe at this point that we need to do other things to stop this constant dominion over all of us. And I'm not necessarily talking about guns or bombs. I mean, I might be, but I'm not.
Right.
I could be, I should say. But I do believe that the system needs to be stopped, and we need to look at different ways to do that than marching in a street. We don't have in the United States, we don't have the chutzpah to actually do what it takes, I don't think, anymore, to stop something just by marching in the street. No, not at all.
Yeah.
I think that's a complete waste of time. And I do think that there are many methods that we could look into to stop this system from happening the way it is and take it back.
Well, you know, Occupy, like, had the right idea, but it's like you occupy a park, that's just mildly annoying to the to the empire, you know? So we've tried to do things in D.C. where we wanted to actually, like, tie up business, you know, block streets, block. It's not going to, I'm sorry, but it's not going to change, and nothing's going to change if we're so like, oh, we don't want to bother people. You know, we don't want to get people stuck in a traffic jam because they might not like us. Well, instead of like, it would be like, start putting pressure on the elected officials if you don't like what's going on, you know? So, and even blocking things and putting your bodies on the line like that is a little mild. But, you know, there's a huge school of thought in activism now is like, I'm sorry, I can't think of words today. If
That's okay.
we like promote that we're pacifist, you know, say, oh, we're not, and I think that really I'm not into generating the violence, but I'm certainly not a pacifist. But if we want to go, oh, you know, don't worry about us, we're pacifists, whatever, that is like just projecting to the empire that we don't mean business. That they can do whatever they want to us.
I agree completely. And
it's a fine line. It's really totally a fine line that we have to walk here. Has there ever been any revolution that overthrew an existing oppressive regime that didn't involve some kind of violence?
I think there was one. And I think that was with Gandhi. But
it involved violence, but it was violence against the protesters.
Right.
From the existing empire. And I think that I always tell people that revolutions aren't violent. It's a counter-revolution that's violent. It's the people who are trying to stop, the citizens or just the regular people from having a system that works for them. Right. And I know the Cuban Revolution had some violence, but it was because Batista, the horrible dictator, didn't leave. You know, he didn't leave the people, and they wanted a legitimate situation that worked for them. Of course, Venezuela had a Bolivarian Revolution that was practically bloodless. You know, but you get everybody on board with you, and then, you know, maybe things like that could actually happen.
I think part of it, too, is that, as in the case in Bolivia, when Bolivia finally, you know, at one point in recent history, was able to have the peasants take over,
right?
You know, and rule, become the ruling class in a way.
Same thing happened in Venezuela. They gave the people the power.
The difference is that people understood the politics. They understood why so many people were needed, and the people who were the people who were needed understood that. We don't have that same understanding here. We don't have that. You know, people look at the farmers, let's say, in South America, and we meaning in the U.S., you know, with such egotism and hubris, would look at that and say, oh, they're uneducated. They know so much more about how their government works than we will ever know about how our government works. Well, sure, there's a handful of us.
They probably know much more about how our government works than we know about how our government works.
And until we have the amount of people who have that intelligence factor in their heart about why our government does not work for us and how much so our government only wants to oppress us, we're never going to create an uprising here by the people. Right. So I'm looking and seeing the different little pieces of possible revolutionaries who might start to, you know, create groups coming out in the United States. And I hope that happens. I hope that happens.
One of your you're in Portland, right?
Right.
One of your fellow Portlanders or Ites, whatever you call yourselves, Brian Wilson talks about this horizontalism. The United States does not want horizontalism. We want to be ruled vertically. We embrace and idolize our so-called rulers. And we want that vertical domination, it looks like. That's what it appears to me. Horizontalism is a lot of work, like you know.
You know, I don't know what that game is called, the one where you load up they're not sticks, there's something, and if you pull out one, the whole tower. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always come back now to the woman in Florida who was arrested and fined, or maybe not arrested, but fined a lot of money for living completely off the grid.
Absolutely. Right.
And she was that block that got, you know, she pulled herself out, extricated her from the vertical, and they came down on her from the top so hard and so heavy. It was unbelievable.
Right. How dare you not? Mm-hmm. How dare you not participate?
You must pay.
Your own oppression.
Yeah. You must pay for the electric bill that you aren't participating in. You must pay for oil. You must pay for water. You must, all of this. And she had it all dealt with. She was all good.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go on to some of your activism there. We have a mutual good friend, Malcolm Chaddock, who is involved with you in these things. But we were talking about, before we started record, we were talking about Ebola. So I think one person in this country has Ebola, and you can't get away from the news where there's something, and I've done a lot of shows about this, Fukushima, and it's really like a terrible cancer that's spreading across this planet. And it seems to be something now to most people that happened in the distant past. But let's talk about No Nukes Northwest and Radcast, because that's something that's very tangible, what you're doing.
Well, the thing is that, you know, while Fukushima, while the initial event happened in the past, there are events on a daily basis in Japan, at Fukushima Daiichi, that occur sometimes many, many times a day. And an event at a nuclear power plant is a very bad thing, because every time there's an event, it means something has broken down even further.
Right.
And when that happens, radiation is released, whether it's through the core, which have melted there, or through steam or explosions or fire.
Right.
And that has not ceased. This is in present time.
Right.
And the thing is that people look at that. They do, if at all, if they even know about it anymore. they look at that as something from the past, and they look at cancer in their own family and among their own friends as, oh, huh, that's terrible. My son got cancer. My friend got cancer. My teacher got cancer. Boy, that's really sad. We have low levels of radiation constantly hitting us, ionizing radiation, stuff from nuclear power plants leaking in the United States and from Fukushima Daiichi coming into our lives all over the United States. And these are lower levels of radiation, which give you cancer. And it takes between 2 and 8 years for those cancers to manifest, depending on what the cancer is.
Right.
And people don't understand the correlation between both Japan and that occurrence at Fukushima and their nuclear plant that is within miles of their house, you know, or 100 miles from their house. The wind doesn't care how far away you live from a nuclear plant. It will make sure that that radiation hits you if the wind is blowing your way. So No Nukes Northwest was formed by a group of us during Occupy. We, a friend of mine who grew up in Tri-Cities, which is where Hanford is, wanted to, you know, just kind of put out the word about that we have this thing called Hanford that is terrible and nobody knew about it. So from that, No Nukes Northwest was created. And later, we started to incorporate everything we knew about nukes into the nuclear power plant that was located there, which is the Columbia Generating Station. And that's what I was talking about before. And that's primarily what we talk about here on No Nukes Northwest, which is on Facebook. Like I said, every day something has gone wrong in some nuclear power plant anywhere in the world. There's about 435 or so nuclear power plants around the world. Everyone has a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, everyone.
Yeah.
So these are the kinds of things that we talk about among ourselves and with a group of people around the world who are interested in this. And anyone's free to come in and join our conversation and share with us what's going on at your nukes and see if we can help you out at all. But today in Massachusetts, there is a trial for the people who broke into Pilgrim and were Pilgrim nuclear power plant and were arrested. The judge who was overseeing that trial for these peaceniks who went in to show everybody, hey, let's plant some flowers here, told Helen Caldicott, who was the main witness for the for the people who were arrested. Yeah. The judge
we'll help each other with words today.
I know. They're probably bombarding us with like electromagnetic field right now, you know. So anyway, Helen was supposed to be the main witness for them to explain to the, you know, the judge why they need to be released. The judge said on Monday she couldn't testify. Well, she's Helen for a reason.
Right.
She's testifying today.
Yeah.
And we're all so grateful that
she
is.
She came all the way from Australia.
Yeah.
That would be freaking rude.
Yeah.
Let her testify. Yeah.
So she is going to testify.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, people need to start to wake up to what's going on in the nuclear world around them. And I'm writing an article on that right now. You know, why aren't environmental leaders, other than Helen, why aren't environmental leaders, and I put that term in quotes, talking about nukes?
Yeah, exactly. Why indeed?
Yeah, why? There's a big reason.
We're going to have a show on the Soapbox People's Network soon, I hope, called The Wrong Kind of Green. And it's basically about exposing these phony environmentalists. And I think a lot of the president, Barack Obama, is a Democrat. He's a huge advocate of nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't really talk about that because then that would expose the hypocrisy in the system.
Right. And who has created the system and why they created the system, which is all for money and domination and dominion and empire.
Right. Well, hopefully, when you get that article done, you'll allow us to repost it on the Soapbox People's Network and get, you know, that kind of information out there. So we've had such an interesting conversation, but unfortunately, we're out of time. So can you talk a little bit about what RADcast is?
Yeah, very briefly, we put out information on lab work that's been done around the world regarding radiation. We're doing our own studies on soil on the West Coast. When we report whatever we do find. We haven't found cesium-134 yet or 137 in our studies, but we're continuing to look. And we post other people's reports. We also post readings of radiation counts around the world from people who have Geiger counters and are putting those up. I go around every day and I look for those and post them. I've been a little bit lax on that recently. This is a volunteer job, and sometimes I just get burnt out on it.
Right.
So I'm on downtime from that at the moment. But the soil tests are still underway, and seaweed tests are still underway.
Well, Mimi will put link to the Facebook page and whatever else you want us to link to in the newsletter about this show. And really, just thank you for your activism and your commitment to peace and a nuclear-free world. I just wish, like you say, that the anti-nuke movement would have some kind of revival. I know there's still, oh my gosh, so many people working against it. But I think when you look traditionally, it's been it's been a struggle where we've had some victories.
There have been some victories, and we need to look at those victories in order to get energized to create more victories.
I just think it became like after the Cold, after the Cold War was over and the Soviet Union fell, people were associating it with, nuclear annihilation without even associating it with this creeping nuclear annihilation that we're facing, like you said, on a daily basis.
Yeah, nuclear power plants are nuclear bombs, and they leak on a daily basis, which creates your death slowly but surely. And these are facts. I mean, this isn't, these are things that you can look up on the NRC website.
Right.
Under events. Right. And I encourage you to go there. It's like a science fiction page.
Ugh.
Yeah, and I'd also like to say just one last thing. And first of all, thank you, Cindy, for having me. I love you. I love what you do. I have the greatest respect for you. And to the people listening, remember that you must be smarter than your leaders.
Well, I think we are, definitely. But I think it might be a lack of wanting the information.
I think that's part of it,
yeah.
But I think that we have our own systemic issues regarding how we think and how we were taught to think. Yeah. And again, it's systemic. We could have a whole other interview on that, Cindy.
Well, let's plan that soon because it was a nice conversation. Certainly a nice conversation talking about some very serious issues here. So, Mimi German, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and let's plan on doing this again soon.
Okay, thank you, Cindy.
Okay, Mimi, have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's this week's Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I hope, as always, that you were informed and inspired. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Jeff for Jeff Justice and Mimi German for giving us their time to be on the show today. And I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.